This is Watch the Media. I'm John Schrader. Great to have you along. Texas Rangers TV voice Dave Raymond. He's a Nebraska native, and he and the rest of the people in baseball are back to work after a long lockout.
It's always really kind of the backdrop of what we do, right? I mean, it's inescapable, because when you talk about building your rosters and competing this year, next year, where your prospects are, all that sort of stuff, really, it's all tied in, right? I mean, somewhere or another, those decisions are all interwoven. And so it's definitely just a part of the business that you, at the very least, have to be aware of and you do sort of acknowledge. I will tell you that from my standpoint as a broadcaster for a ball club, I just don't feel like that is of the greatest interest to the viewer, the listener. And so generally speaking, I try to avoid it as part of the conversation. I think they're much more interested in what the guy is able to do or has accomplished, or what the prospects are for him to advance the team in whatever way he can. And so I try to focus on that stuff. And so while it's always looming and it's always a part of the conversation, perhaps maybe more so off the air than on the air, I try to leave it out of my, you know, my daily performance and obligations. So I'm aware of it, but, and I follow it because I do find it interesting, but I don't love talking about it during a broadcast. I just think it's unseemly.
So in turn, as an employee of the club, how are you asked not to talk about it in forums like this? Asked not to share your personal opinion about this stuff outside of what is officially your duty?
Yeah, and I don't think this is a breach of any etiquette or protocol with the ball club. I'm comfortable telling you, because I think it's fairly well understood around the league. When the lockout happened, and the Texas Rangers were in a unique position because they made two enormous signings the day of, really at midnight that night, we went dark. But I did get a call from my boss, and he told me in very direct terms that until the lockout is figured out or resolved, that I was not to tweet, I was not to speak, I was not to reference or in any way get involved in the conversation publicly. And as he pointed out, as an employee of the ball club, if I were to, let's say, talk to a ball player who I know well, right? Maybe we're buddies off the air, whatever. Like I can't email, text, and speak to him because it could be considered tampering. And you know, this thing obviously was a pretty big deal. I was kind of relieved. You're right, because I was like, you don't want to say something that's going to get you in trouble, and you don't want to mess something up. And so it made it very simple for me. When people asked me, I can't talk about it, you know, rather not talk about, let's talk about other stuff. To the degree, if a ball player tweeted something, maybe a funny thing, maybe nothing to do with baseball, I couldn't like that tweet, or at least I was not supposed to like that tweet. So in any case, that was where our team stood on it. Now, it also happens that our primary owner was on the executive subcommittee of owners, one of eight owners in the room. So maybe he would be a little more sensitive than other owners. So I definitely felt comfortable not being in any way a part of the conversation.
So they did you a favor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stay away. Yeah. So how do you think, Dave, the average baseball fan looks at baseball now after this? Some of them are too young to remember the last time this happened. But how does the average fan, do you think, approaching baseball now after this sort of tete-a-tete?
Yeah, well, you and I were actually in fairly close proximity the last time this really got ugly, back in 94. And in that season, which most people are now aware of, you know, that was the year they didn't even play the World Series. And that was really ugly. And we all wondered, how the game would respond. And it did, right? That the bottom line is the game did respond and people did come back. And I'm sure there were holdouts. I'm sure there were people who it happens all the time. I'm done with it, right? I don't want to hear about the NBA. I don't want to talk about Major League Baseball. I'm through with the NFL, right? Everyone's always done with it. But they all, or a lot of them, it seems, do come back. And I think it's dangerous if you're in baseball's position or any of these other sports position when they have to deal with it. It's dangerous to assume that they will and to assume that it will always cycle back the way it has for all these years, because we've had labor strife more than once and fans do come back time and again. Do you lose fans along the way on occasion? I suspect you probably do, but ultimately these games are pretty resilient and they're entertaining and they provide all this stuff that people seem to enjoy. And so they do come back. I think baseball will be fine. I think they'll survive it. I think it's been very interesting just in the time that they did resolve the lockout to now, which is 2 weeks, how much activity has happened, right? The free agent activity, trades, et cetera, and how engaged fans have been and how interested they've been and how much they've enjoyed it. And all of a sudden, in this very, very short period of time, how little we talk about the stuff that dominated our conversations for the previous several months. So, I say it with that little nagging caveat hanging in the background, like one must be careful because you don't know when you've pushed people too far. But I think people will come back. I think the game is still what people enjoy. Do they get irked by this stuff? Yes. Are they tired of it? Yeah. But when it's all done and we just put it in the background for a while and just concentrate and enjoy the games, I think they tend to enjoy them. So I'm hopeful that it'll rebound quickly.
Dave talks about how baseball is reaching out to the next generation of baseball fans.
I think that is the question, right? I don't know if I would use the word concerned. I'm cognizant and certainly interested in figuring out whatever we can do to continue to maybe update the game, right? Its beauty is in the way that it has been played all these years in such a similar fashion. We can compare eras, et cetera. But realistically, the world has changed, right? The way we consume media has changed. When you and I first met, this certainly was never a consideration that we would be doing this. So
that is true.
Look, TikTok and Instagram and Snapchat, all these things, like this is the way media is consumed. I not to veer off your question, but I keep circling back to the Olympics. And initially people were freaked out. Oh boy, NBC, they really messed this one up. Nobody's watching the Olympics on TV. And after about a week of this, NBC kind of came out and said, well, here's the thing. We're quite happy, right? We're getting all the eyeballs we could have anticipated or wanted through all these different mediums. And every time, the funny part about that is, right, in the old days, you have to play 2 hours of figure skating, during which you would take, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 breaks of a certain length, and you get to sell that time. Now they put a 40-second highlight on some social media app. And of course I'm going to watch 40 seconds. Yeah, I'm interested. I want to watch it. And they attach an ad or two to that, to every single person who watches it. And they can specifically direct that ad at that person. I mean, it's brilliance and it's much more efficient and effective for them. So I guess all this by way of saying things change, the way people consume the games change. And baseball has to be aware of that. And I think they have a couple of primary concerns they need to address. And one of them is the consumption model. Through cable, we understand that is a model that's shifting rapidly. And so streaming becomes a big thing. Well, Major League Baseball has done a really good job of hoarding and hanging on to their streaming rights, but then also blacking out their own markets because they want to take care of the client that pays them their broadcast rights. So that needs to be untangled so that the fans of that team in that city can watch their teams. That's a huge one, but there's a major financial stake in the middle of it. So that's one that they have to address. And then the other, I think, back to your original point, is just the style of the game. How can we create more action, right? We have this little conversation a lot about, was it the length of the game so much as it is the kind of the pace of the action? There's little action. So that's what they're trying to address. And, you know, their big initiative is this pitch clock idea that we'll probably see next year at the major league level. And that may change some things. I would suggest there are other ways to do it as well. I like the pitch clock idea, but I really like the idea of maybe thinking about tweaking the roster size specifically as it relates to pitching. And if we can stop teams from carrying 13, 14 pitchers and giving them the opportunity to use all of them every night the way they do. And instead, if you're limited to carrying 10 pitchers, four or five of which, or whom rather, are starters, then that drastically changes the way you're going to ask those guys to work. Right now, if you're a starter, go out there, throw as hard as you can, give as much as you possibly have on each pitch until you run out of gas. And that's why starters are going shorter and shorter stints. So we see more and more bullpen usage. So if you have fewer arms at your avail, maybe we go back to guys pitching, you know, more in line with the way we grew up with starters pitching. So I think that would help. So there are ways, there are things. Some of them almost harken back to playing the game more like we used to, like 40 years ago. And you think, well, how is that modernizing the game for the audience? It's just a matter of, I think, making the game entertaining the way it used to be entertaining. It's less entertaining now because it is so analytically driven.
Baseball now has probably as many fun, dynamic young stars as they've had in a generation, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I think they're loaded right now. And I think that increases with every passing year. The talent is incredible. I kind of, my heart breaks for some of the guys because it's got to be so difficult to hit. Or so difficult to pitch. Everything's so difficult now. These guys, their skill level is so incredibly high, and the game is already very challenging as it was. But we see it defensively. I remember a couple of years ago, Jason Stark, whom I love, he's a great national baseball writer based out in Philadelphia, and he talked about, like, well, the thing I miss are those wonderful defensive plays, and I would counter that today by saying, like, If you watch the games, you're going to see two or three ridiculously athletic plays on the defensive side every night and every game. They are amazing, these athletes. So, yeah, I agree. I think the athletes are there. I think the skill set's there for it to be very dynamic.
A couple of things that have been changed and added to baseball in this new deal. DH is now universal. And they're going to start wearing little sponsorship patches on the uniforms, like almost everybody else in sports do. Those are a couple. What do you think of those changes and maybe especially the DH change being universal?
Yeah, the DH change, to me, that's a pretty fundamental change. The little patches on the uniforms doesn't move the needle for me one way or the other. I'm not that worried about the little things. But that's when you start to, you know, some of this stuff can really bring out the old man yelling at clouds thing. But,
you know, for me, that is just, it seemed like, I mean, soccer's been doing that forever. World sports have been doing that forever. NBA started doing it. And it was like, woo, what's going on? The world's going to end. And apparently it hasn't. I think it's fine. Yeah. If you can make an extra buck doing that, you know, we've got to listen to the, hi, I'm Dave Raymond coming from the so-and-so studio and the so-and-so press box and the so-and-so stadium. So, you know, what's one more little thing to sell, right?
I mean, who are we kidding? Are they not marketing every single inch of every game that they can? I mean, it's goofy, of course. So yeah, that doesn't, to me, that's nothing. The DH thing, I think that's real. Now, it's real today to me, and it's real to a lot of fans, I think, in the moment. 5 years from now, maybe we're all shoulder shrugging, like, I can't believe we kept the pitcher hitting as long as we did. But, you know, I really came up a National League guy. My first full-time job in Major League Baseball was in the National League. And when I took a job in the American League, I thought this is going to be a beating. I'm going to miss that pitcher piece of it. And I do to a certain degree. They are very distinctly different games when they're played one way or the other. And I happen to enjoy the pitchers hitting. I think it's fun. I think it provides these moments of just almost like incredible chance as much as anything else. But there are guys, right? We've seen pitchers over the years who really help themselves by being great hitters, just like you see pitchers help themselves by being incredible defensively. So I think it's a shame to take that away from certain guys. And I'll miss that part of it. I'll definitely miss that part of it, but I'm sure we will get used to it and we'll move on.
One of the things that sort of baffles some of us from the outside is why there's no real salary cap in baseball. What's the term? Competitive balance tax, the CBT, which sounds like a salary cap in a different form. Why is it that baseball has resisted so much saying, okay, this is what you can spend. This is what you can spend. Yankees, Royals, Pirates, whoever. I mean, the game has changed considerably from like small market, big market. That's a distinction that's really difficult to make anymore. So why is it this way?
The simple answer to that question is it's that way because the players' union wants it that way. And the players' union is the strongest union in sports. And it's got to be one of the stronger unions just period in America. They have done an incredible job over the years fighting for the various things that are meaningful to them. And one of them is they feel like if they put a cap on spending, then they're artificially capping their earning potential. And the owners have been very clever. They would love, a salary cap because then they could, plan on that and then artificially dampen those earnings for the players. And so, they've always argued like what you want, right? Like they're talking to their children. What you really want is, a floor. You want a salary floor, right? That teams can't spend less than, let's just call it $80 million a year. And there's some real strength and of logic and whatnot to that. And I think from the owners, I think there are a number of teams that would love to implement that because they're sick and tired of exceeding the tax and having to pay in to revenue sharing only to see small, quote unquote, small market teams pay substandard wages to pitchers or to players rather, and then take from this collective bargaining their quote unquote share because they're not spending like the Yankees or the Dodgers or the Red Sox, name the team. That's got to be really aggravating. I'm trying to be competitive. I'm paying big money to make my teams competitive. These teams are making money off me. I'm literally paying them. And then when my team comes through town, they bankroll that as well. When the Yankees come through, they sell plenty of tickets. And these guys are paying one-fifth for their rosters that I am. As a Yankees, a Red Sox, whomever, yeah, I would find that terribly annoying. So I see why a portion of the ownership would want that floor. And I do think there's real value there for the players too. I mean, I just think it would elevate a lot of spending that otherwise is not there because there are teams right now, the Reds come to mind, who are with this close to being competitive and a postseason team, and they're dumping like crazy, and they're going to get money, right? They're going to get paid because the Mets go way over the tax threshold. It's crazy.
You said one of the things that is a concern to baseball is the consumption model, right? Mm-hmm. Now, and the way the consumption of sports has changed, the way consumption of media has changed. How has your approach to broadcasting changed, your need to deliver in a certain way changed in the way the consumption of the game has changed?
Well, I would say that it has heightened my awareness of the in and out nature of fans, right? Now, I still very much think of my job as I visualize somebody sitting on their couch watching the game. So that model, antiquated as it is still, I think, what I visualize. And I see us competing with the phone and the iPad or whatever. And then I also see us competing with, great dramas and productions on cable. And so, one of the things they teach you is to reset, particularly at certain points in an hour where you want to try and grab people's attention. Make sure that, as things are going to commercial here or there, that they're staying with you, or that they're not at the top of the hour. That might be a really good time, as an example, to really reset what's compelling about what has happened tonight and what is right around the corner that we don't want to miss, because this could get really crazy here. Because right at the top of the hour, they might be tempted just to say, oh, yeah, what is on TBS right now, and flip over there. And so you want to stop them from doing that. So I do find that I'm a little more conscious of that, but that's really probably it. Because otherwise what can you do? other than try and make the game interesting. And I will say, broadcasters, we go through this all the time. And I think especially early on when Vin Scully was, spinning his yarns, and everybody could acknowledge that he is the greatest that's, ever done it. I think everybody wanted to tell stories. They wanted to have these anecdotes. They wanted to make these guys so compelling every night. And you get really distracted doing that. And I just remember, a number of conversations over the years with people like Vinny or John Miller and others who continually stressed that people tune in because they're interested in the game and the results, the action. They're a fan of that team. They want to know what's happening. Whoa, are they going to win? Will something good or bad happen? Is this guy hot or cold? And so if you can maybe focus your attention more on selling the excitement of what you're actually watching, like, that might help elevate the product and keep people engaged. If you're constantly talking about side stories in baseball, side stories in other sports, or something about this guy off the field, really sort of subconscious way, what you're communicating to the viewer is the game doesn't matter. I don't know why you'd be paying attention to this garbage anyway, because I'm talking to you about this Yankees scandal or this great series happening out in LA. It's like, whoa, that's wrong. Focus really hard on what about this pitch, this inning, this at bat is really important to this team and the viewer. And I think, I think that focus sometimes has really, I don't know if it's helped or not, but it's one of those things that I do try to be mindful of.
I know that's one thing that drove John Miller crazy about the final years at ESPN, where they would spend so much time on this long list of storylines that were all so finely produced. And he and Joe Morgan would say, we want to talk about the baseball game. We want to do the baseball game. But it isn't the way it was sort of the ESPN way of saying, we've got to draw a bigger audience. At least I guess that's the philosophy. We have to draw a bigger audience. And maybe if they're not focused on this one thing, we can pull them into some other narrative, I guess.
It's terrible. And because you watch it, I mean, when you tune into other sports and stuff, you can tell when the broadcast is focused on the game and when the broadcast is focused on the sport in general, and kind of dumbing it down, et cetera, and making it as broad as possible for people. It's not fun. It's not interesting to me as a sports fan. And I think it's a really subtle thing that networks oftentimes forget, is that, really just, I had a choice. I tuned into this game for this game. So, and I think it's one of the things that's brilliant about the NFL. When you get a random, if you get the Detroit Lions and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, on a Sunday afternoon, they're not talking about what's going on with the Eagles. They're not wasting your time with how are the Bills doing. They're talking about that game. The NFL is a pretty good model to pay attention to. They're doing something right, but all those broadcasts are about that game. And I think that really works. I think it's really important. I don't think enough, whether broadcast executives, even broadcasters, I don't know that we recognize how important that is.
I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I believe I know the answer to the question. Who is the person who's had the biggest impact on your professional life?
Well, I've never been asked a more self-serving question, Shrades, than that. Obviously, it was my internship at KNBR in San Francisco.
Okay. Now for the real answer.
No, you know what? John Miller is a guy who's had a really big impact on me. And in a lot of different ways. And sometimes I wonder exactly why it happened that way. And he just got as engaged as he did. But he not only has been really supportive and helpful for me and, you know, getting jobs and that sort of stuff, helping really get me a start with the San Francisco Giants. He had me fill in 1 year for him for a handful of weekends. And those games, like that kind of a breakthrough for a kid in the minor leagues is enormous. But he didn't stop after that. You know, he helped me get something with Baltimore a year or two later. And then all these years, he's just been incredible counsel and just such a wonderful friend who, you know, we share a passion about the game and what we do. And he's always, I love it. And, you know, you get together with a guy and you just sit down and it's immediate, the connection and all the past stuff, just we catch up instantly. And then we're just off into the depths of this sort of stuff that we talk about, which is, as much as I love baseball, I love having these conversations, right? Talking about the craft and how it works and why we do what we do. I don't know what it is, but I really, really love that part of it. And John does too. And so we've shared many a good meal talking about this kind of nonsense that would just bore the average person to death, but it's scintillating to the two of us. And he's just that, and those moments too, right? What I've learned from him over the years has just helped me enormously.
Well, with the retirement of Vin Scully, there's no doubt, and certainly in the last 15 years, John Miller was already on his way to that point, but there is no better stylist, no better performer, no better baseball announcer. Maybe there's no better announcer in America day in and day out than John Miller. I'm not pandering to your interests. I believe that and have for a long time.
Yeah, me too. I think people who understand the industry understand how this stuff works. You can't listen to John and not come away thinking that. It's just an enormous respect that people have for him in our industry, and all very deserved. And the funniest thing about John is that he's kind of oblivious to it all. He's just such a goofball. He's exactly as he seems on the air. He's just so delightful, man.
Yeah. You know, you did minor leagues. You used your journalism credibility credentials to make a living while you're trying to get to the big leagues. What kept you going? What kept you driving forward when, you know, one more year of the Iowa Cubs and go, geez, do I want to do that for another year? AAA in Des Moines is okay, but it's not the big leagues, right? So what was it that kept you going?
Yeah, well, I think it's probably a combination of things. But one of them I think is impossible not to acknowledge is there's this certain amount of investment that you've made, right? If you've done it 3-4 years, let's just say you've done it 3 years in the minor leagues. Well, first of all, you're making nothing, right? You're sacrificing years of your life. You are making $500, $1,000 a month for 6 months. I mean, you know, not for the year. So you get to that point where you're like, geez, I've done this 3 years. So I want to just, maybe I'm close to a certain break, something happening, a next step. I'll just give it one more year. And so there's that sunk cost thing, that the same stuff that would make a guy like me a very poor investor, right? Is that you have to understand when to cut bait, you know? But I just always felt like it could happen. There were people like John. But I remember, you know, another person, I'm sure you remember, Debbie Gallus, worked for the Oakland A's.
Of course.
And, I interned for Debbie in the Stanford Media Relations Department briefly. And then she went off and worked with Oakland. Well, one day I was just a young pup in the minor leagues. She got me a press pass and gave me the grand tour. And I met Bill King and I met Ken Korak. I met these guys. They're just giants. and walked through the press area. And then I sat down in this booth and I watched the game from there. And I've told her this before. I got in my car that afternoon, pulled out of the parking lot. Game wasn't quite done. And I just looked around. I thought, like, well, I can do this. None of that seemed so difficult, right? I think I can do this. In fact, I was like, I definitely can do this. So I will. I'll just do it. And, you know, just drove off to my minor league job. And it was that, I remember that day so vividly because it, you know, it just tore down some of those walls and some of the mystique and helped just make it a real thing where I thought, okay, oh, that's how that works. I see. So I just always believed, you know, I mean, I'm a sucker, John. I mean, I'm a country bumpkin sucker from Western Nebraska. And, and you could sell me just about anything. So I sold myself that I could do it and I stuck with it.
And so, and it keeps you humble, right? It keeps you humble and driven. So where you are now at your point in your career and doing big league baseball on television, it's like you can always, you know, like Satchel Paige used to say, right? There's always somebody looking over your shoulder, right? So, I mean, it does keep you humble. Like, I don't want to do that again. I want to keep doing this and I belong here, but I've got to work my ass off every single day to do it, right?
Oh yeah. You know, and even when I got to Houston and it was a full-time job and I had the job for 7 years and you're thinking, wow, you're, and there was in my mind when I was a kid, when I was getting into it, I thought, well, once you get in, it certainly seemed to me, these guys never leave. I mean, they never leave. It's like a Supreme Court appointment. These guys, they never leave. So I was like, well, once I'm in, baby. Well, 7 years into the Houston job, ownership changed. They clear everybody out. And now I'm without a job. And that was not great. and I remember thinking, I don't know why exactly I had the number, but I was like, 3 years. I've got 3 years to get back in. Because after 3 years of being separated from this, I'm irrelevant. I'm that guy who couldn't make it. So I put all this incredible pressure on myself to get back in 3 years. Well, you can't force it, right? The jobs don't necessarily come open in 3 years. You just don't know. So that was a terrifying time as well. And so, but then getting fired after 7 years in the big leagues, man, you start to hold on pretty tight. You're white knuckling every day in the job. But actually, you know, the more you can let go, the more you can just relax and just accept that you don't have control of it. Obviously, the much better off you are. It's easier said than done. But, you know, I got to some pretty tough places in those whatever intervening 4 years. And I just kind of came to peace with it. Like, look, you are who you are. You do what you do. It either works or we're gonna have to figure something else out. Unfortunately, I got very, very lucky and landed with the Rangers, and it's worked out nicely.
Oh, great. Well, I'm happy for you. I'm proud of the work you're doing. Not that I had anything to do with it, but I did know you when you didn't have gray hair and when I had hair. So that's been a long time. So way back when. So and thanks a million for sharing part of your views of the craft and other things. And it's always a pleasure to chat with you. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, it's awesome, John. I appreciate it. Always love catching up. And this is the part of what we do, right? It's like friendships that last decades that are just so meaningful and rewarding. I love hearing from your students over the years, you know, that you send my way. I just get the biggest kick out of it. I love it.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you're so warm and accepting to the students and, you know, because they're like, Dave Raymond, when he was in the booth with Bill King, right? It's like, yeah, these are the guys who are doing it, and this is what I want to do. And if the guys who are doing it don't share that with the guys who want to do it, then we'll lose a generation of guys who are going to do it. So
no, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. And they all can. That's the other thing to bear in mind is you all can, because believe me, you know, there's no pixie dust here. Like you just have to figure out how to do it.
And there's only about 100 jobs in the big leagues, or 120, whatever it is, broadcast jobs in the big leagues out of the tens of thousands of young people who want to do it. Yeah. So, I'm sorry. Those are numbers that are scary, aren't they?
They are. That's one thing too. Don't ever do the math, because if you do the math, man.
Ooh. Well, I didn't want to go into math. That's why I went into this business. So, all right. Same. Thanks, Dave.
You bet. Thanks, John. Bye-bye.
Dave Raymond, the TV voice of the Texas Rangers. I'm John Schrader. This is Watch the Media.